I think MSRI pays graduate student to take notes of the lectures.
And explain them, right?
Huh?
To make them, to take the notes and explain them, right?
Yeah, to explain them. Yeah. Yeah, we can do it. Yeah, go ahead. You're the chairman, you help me. Hello? Hello? Can you hear me?
I can hear you for sure.
Okay.
Okay, let me announce the interim who will begin his last talk on virginity and related topics. And this is what today's subtitle is kind of democracy.
Well, part of it. Yeah, so thanks, Lava. So today I want to wrap up by telling you a little bit about the proof of the results in dimension 3 or higher. So if you recall, let me just very loosely state the theorem. Of course, in dimension 2, we know more, but in higher dimensions, this is an open problem. So suppose you take simple metrics. I'm not going to do the case of non-simple. So there exists an open and dense set of simple metrics. As I said, that includes all the real analytic metrics in CK, such that if you take two metrics which are close in the CK sense to G0, where G0 is in L, then and the distance functions are the same, this implies one is the pullback of the other by change of variables, which is the identity of the bottom. So that's the statement of the theorem, and then we're going to see also related questions of stability, Because for stability, two metrics are close to each other. I mean, the statements are for metrics close. If they are far apart, there is nothing to do. And I will talk a little bit about reconstruction of most of the emphasis so far has been just on uniqueness. But you have robust uniqueness, you should be able to do stability and reconstruction. Okay, so the method is via linearization. So we're going to linearize the problem. In other words, we're going to take the derivative of a family of metrics, or the distance function of a family of metrics. So I'm going to use the summation convention. Lj family of metrics, gamma S of T. So we're going to take the derivative of the family of metrics, and you, for unit speed geodesics, this is a small exercise, you get 1/2 integral of Fij, exactly what it is there, gamma 0 of t, gamma 0 dot I t, gamma 0 of t dt. And where the F is just the derivative of the metric at S. I think the notation I have is at S equal to 0. Okay? So that's the linearized problem. And this is of interest in its own right. So the question is whether you can recover a tensor. Can we recover a tensor? It is a problem of tensor tomography. So can we recover the tensor? From the geodesic X-ray tensor. That's the problem. Okay, we have seen this in the previous lecture already. For scalar functions, zero tensors and tensor of order one. In fact, there is a general transform if G is a function on the of X and C. You integrate the function. Let me just Lucy says the integration dt of this function on geodesic flow. This is just a you can do it for general functions. So for two tens, for scalar functions, so I zero corresponds to the case that this is independent of C. You're integrating just scalar functions. We considered that last yesterday. One tensor order one is the Doppler transform. Ci, a more general tensor, so the one I'm going to consider today is, so they are polynomials in C, homogeneous polynomial of order 2, 1, 0, and we can consider homogeneous polynomials of order m. Okay, so these appear already. The lecture yesterday, so will appear today. Tensors of higher order appear for other tensors like elasticity. You have you integrate tensors of order 4. You need to have some structure on the function g in order to be able to recover because it has too many variables. Okay, so can you recover? So the answer is as we also described yesterday for I1 is not. You cannot also because this comes from the linearization, and we know of the bounded rigidity problem, we know there is an obstruction there already. So the obstruction in this case, which comes by linearizing that obstruction, or you can do it directly, is the following. You decompose a tensor in its solenoidal part and the potential part. So D is the symmetric covariant derivative. So, and FS is curl free, the divergence, divergence is equal to zero. The delta is divergence with respect to the metric. And this can be found very easily by just taking delta F, delta DV, and you solve the boundary value problem. You have a system, so you need something to check here, but you can check that this, you can solve the system, and then you can find this potential vector field and the solenoidal vector field. So FS is called the solenoidal part, and this is the potential. It's just a standard Helmholtz decomposition for vector fields in curl free and divergence free. Okay, so and it's easy to see that you take, so unless I said for it otherwise, I'm just talking about I2, the case of tensor order 2, but this is also true for more general tensors, I of dV is equal to zero, just because it's a perfect derivative. So the linearized problem that we're going to tackle is, can you find the solenoidal part from the geodesic X-ray transfer? So that, of course, has injectivity, stability, and reconstruction, as before. So the main crux in the proof of this theorem is what is stated there. You can solve the linearized problem. We can solve locally, near a metric, the boundary rigidity problem. And this is not the standard for an inverse problem, because as we know, inverse problems are ill-posed. And so it depends on how ill-posed they are that this is going to be true. For instance, for Calderon's problem, you can linearize it, and that's a very ill-posed problem, and linearization is not going to lead to any conclusion, at least not directly, not using any function analysis type of argument. But in this case, we can. So the theorems that I'm going to state, there are other results. I think Gabriel already talked about tensor tomography in some detail, so I just want to mention some of the results, main results, there are others. In dimension 2, we know the whole story for simple manifolds, again. We know the whole story for the boundary rigidity problem, in fact. And it was proven by Sharafuddino, but in fact, linearizing the proof that I presented yesterday for the nonlinear problem, that was one of the cases where you solve the linearized problem after you solve the nonlinear problem. And you can. So that was done for Sharafuddino. And with Gabriel and Miko here, we found a much simpler proof of that. And it works for any solenoidal tensor field, any tensor field of any order in dimension 2. In fact, you only need to know facts about I0 and I1 to be able to say facts about tensors of any order. Okay. And the other result, so we'll talk a little bit about stability in a second. The other result in dimension 3 or higher is for simple manifolds, and it's a real analytic manifold. Then this is the geodesic transform is injective on solenoidal tensor fields. So this will imply the solution of the boundary rigidity problem in near real analytic matrix and also stabilities. It's not just going to be near analytic matrix, but it will be an open set of matrix because the stability is going to be short. So let me consider that. Huh? Not here. It's not. No, again. In fact, yes, good point. This realization is also the realization of the scattering relation. You consider the scattering relation, and you linearize, you're led to the same problem. So the problem for tensor tomography is general, not just for simple manifolds. Sorry? Those results are for simple manifolds. We know some results for non-simple manifolds. I mentioned some of them in my first or second lecture, I don't remember. But very little. I can tell you a little bit of the results that we know. But these results are for simple. I will tell you where we use simplicity. It's also true that it's not true that it's also the fact that it's not true that you can recover a function from geodesic transform for non-simple manifolds in general. Like Charlie pointed out, you take a sphere, you make it a manifold with boundaries, you just take two pieces, and you take an odd function, and the integral is going to be zero. So you need some condition also, but it's not so clear what is the right condition. Okay, so what is the approach? The approach is is very much based on the approach to invert the X-ray transform when you integrate along lines. So if I is the X-ray transform, the metric is Euclidean. How can you find inversion formula? So the inversion formula of Radon can be done in the following way. You take I, yeah, this is for functions, okay. So I zero. Let me just do the case of function for the moment. So what you do, you take this normal operator, I zero star I zero. And what is that operator? You can easily check that for functions, say compactly supported functions in the whole space, this is a constant times the singular integral. So this is a singular integral, but not you don't need principal value. This is an integral of singularity. So, and the inverse is just the square root of the Laplace. A lot of the times, the inversion formula is written with the derivative here. And you can commute this with the Hilbert transform, in fact. You can commute this with the Hilbert transform here, times the derivative. So this is a pseudo-differential operator. -1. Okay, and this is true in general for simple manifolds. Let me write the formula. I'm doing just a case of functions. I will write down the formulas for tensors order 2. There is a general formula for any tensor. Of course, the higher the tensor, the more complicated it gets. But it's exactly the same. Same idea. So let me consider now, let's take a metric in Rn for simplicity. Let's take I0 again with a metric now, which is simple. Okay, so then you can compute I0 star I0 of a function, again it's a constant, times f of y. Here is the square root of the determinant of g. And here is the distance in the metric g between x and y to the power n minus 1. And there is a factor which is the determinant, so the modulus of the determinant of the second derivative of the distance function square. So this cancels actually the so you can check this formula. So let me point out where this formula comes from and where simplicity is used in this. You look at I0 star, I0 in general, it's going to be the integral in time of the function, and here, sorry, how much space here. So let me, you take the exponential map at the point x in the direction c, and you integrate over the fiber here, integrating in time, dt. Sorry for. So that's, you can easily check that the geodesic, this integrates along geodesics. The transpose, the adjoint, you take a point and you take all the geodesics going through the point and then you integrate over all that. That's the dual transpose in general. This is a very general fact. So that's what you get this. So where do we use simplicity here? We use change of variables. We say that y is the exponential of x of this. Right? And that's where this factor comes from. And in order to have a change of variables, and this is just the Jacobian of the change of variables, you need that this be a diffeomorphism. So that's where the simplicity comes from. So there is a question, and I already pointed this problem before. Suppose you have conjugate points. So one approach, suppose you have conjugate points. What is I0 star, I0 microlocally? And you get extra singularities. So you get the subdifferential operator, and singularities coming from singularities of the conjugate points from the exponential map. And it gets very complicated. We have a paper with Plum and Stefano about just the case of faults. When the conjugate points has just false. So that's the simplicity condition that is used here. You just need no conjugate points in the metric for this. Okay, so now it's clear that this is also a differential operator of order minus 1. This is a singular integral, clearly, and so it's the same statement is valid here. And let me point out another very important factor that so I0 star I0 is an elliptic pseudo differential operator of order minus 1. So we can construct the parametrics, an inverse. But if we know that the x-ray transform is injective, if we know, so now we're going to get the following estimate. So let me state the proposition. Now, I was talking here about the case of metrics in Rn and compact support and all that. In our case, we have a little bit more complicated situation. We have a Riemannian manifold with boundary, which is simple. And I'm going to put it as a subset of a slightly larger simple manifold. Remember, we can extend the metric in a C infinity way. The reason being that we don't have two differential operators on manifold with boundary. And so you need to extend it a little bit for, you need open manifold. So, and the statement is that if IG is injective, I zero is injective. So you know a priori is injective. This is a statement I made before, that you just need to know the injectivity. Then you get that F in the L2 norm of M is less or equal than a constant times I zero of F H1 of the slightly larger set for functions supported in M. Okay, because these are not local, I star, I is not a local operator, and so we need to go a little bit further. So this is the kind of stability estimate, sorry, another typo. I see this. So we consider the normal operator instead of the geodesic transform itself, but for stability purposes, this is good enough. So this is the story for function. It's very similar for tens. So let me consider open problem 6. You remember all the 5 open problems? Nobody has come up with solutions yet. Which is a subset of the problems I stated before. But I just want to know if the question is, when will this be macrolocally invertible? Of course, I would like to know when it's invertible, but let me ask a simpler question for which MG non-simple. Remember, we really want to attack the problem of non-simple manifolds. If macrolocally invertible. The fact that you have extra singularities doesn't mean that it cannot be inverted. I mean, it's not a sub-differential operator. You can have other singularities, but it may be weaker. So we did something about this, but we don't have a final answer, so I'm not going to describe it. Okay. And this estimate is valid, so let me consider under a small perturbation, this is for a metric G, and the constant is uniform for metrics close to the metric where you are. So now the case of tensors is similar, of I2. Let me just do I2, is similar. But of course it's not elliptic anymore. We cannot have it an elliptic, we know it has a big kernel. But so, should I write it for you? It's a complicated expression, I'm not going to. If you want, I can write it down, I wrote it in my notes. It's a, again, it's a sub-differential operator. Of order minus one. But it's elliptic on the solenoidal, well, you expect it to be elliptic in the solenoidal, on solenoidal vector tensor field. You get exactly the same estimate on solenoidal. And the constant again is uniform for metrics close to the given metric. Okay. So this is I didn't say one important thing here. This is the part. This is always a sub-differential operator of Riemann. It's elliptic one if I2 is injective on solenoidal vector fields, a tensor field. Remember, in general, we can construct an inverse. So this is always true. It's elliptic on solenoidal vector field. This estimate is valid if I is injective. It's called S injective, but let me on solenoidal tensor field. Because my colloquial analysis will tell you it's an inverse modulo smoothing operator, compact operator, you have a Fredholm operator, but if it is injective, then you can get this estimate. But when is it injective? So there are the theorems there. In the case in two dimensions, it's always injective for simple manifolds, and in fact for any tensor. In dimension three or higher, there are results of Pestofan and Serafudino for when you have bounded curvature, not too large curvature. The result that we use there is that we know that I2 is S. So S injective is means injective on solenoidal tensor fields. And in fact, this is true for any tensor of any order. This is also true for any tensor of any order if G is real analytic. How do you use real analyticity? So let me. So it's an open problem in dimension three or higher whether this is injective, S injective in general. And that will be open problem.
It's bounded
from above, yeah. Comparable with the
size.
Right. Yeah, it's essentially negative curvature. Maybe a little bit of positive curvature, but not much.
Or
a small domain, I guess that would be true. But that's very that follows from here. Now it's, yeah. So how to use real analyticity? For instance, this applies to the case, the standard cases, the X-ray transform, the Euclidean case, the sphere, the hyperbolic plane. There are many real analytic matrices, not so. You get results close to those. Remember the semi-global results that I pointed out before were close to a Euclidean metric, or maybe one can do it for other metrics. Well, it's the following. If in general you have, this is related to the talk by David, and let me just take the case of zero of scalar functions to explain the idea. You can find an operator here to invert this plus smoothing. And this depends on the metric G, right? Case compact and smooth. And remember, the support of F is contained in a compact set on M. So you want to invert this. In general, we have a problem when to invert Fredholm operators. And we cannot in general, but in this case, you can. If G is real analytic, this is analytic smoothing. So that means KG, this is smoothing in general, means you map any distribution to something smooth. KG of F will be real analytic. Then you need to prove that. So this will this is an analytical differential operator, and you have to do all of this. It's technical, but you can do it. And now you have, suppose you have that, and now we use the Fredholm alternative. Look at the injectivity of that. Then F must be equal to minus KF. But this is real analytic and compactly supported, therefore it has to be zero. And that's how you use that. You prove that I zero is injective. We know it in general, but I just want to prove to tell you that how to do the real analyticity. I mean, you can do the same for general tensors of any order. So you use a little bit of this analytic Michael-Locke analysis. That's quite technical. It's not so easy to prove that these are analytic sub-differential operators and all. Okay. So open problem 7. Even for simple manifolds. Of course, all the problems I'm talking about have some connections between each other, and some of them will imply, the harder ones will imply the easier ones. I'm just putting different kinds of problems. Is I2, or IM more generally, is S injective in dimension bigger or equal than 3? For simple manifolds. Of course, we're interested in non-simple manifolds as well, but simple manifolds. Okay. So now let me consider the non-linear problem. So we have a very good estimate for the linearized problem, and this leads to a good estimate for the stability estimate for the non-linear problem. So the theorem so whenever you can solve this problem, linearized problem for the travel time with a robust estimate for the linearized problem, you can solve the nonlinear problem. Does not follow from the implicit function theorem, and you can prove it, because you cannot use implicit function theorem here. We don't know anything about the range of the nonlinear map. So you have to make up a little implicit function theorem yourself, but it can be done if the linearized problem is well posed. So let me state the theorem of stability and uniqueness, of course, since for all mu less than 1, that exists k bigger or equal than 1, they get larger with the mu gets closer to 1, such that g0 is in ck of m simple with s injective, ig0, there exists epsilon and c such that c will depend on a subject with g1 and g2 with close to g0 in c2, and you have an a priori bound, this is standard inverse problem, it's a conditional estimate, is less or equal than a, then you have that, and there is a list, it's long to write down, but let me, it's less or equal than this constant that depends on this a, the distance function power mu, continuous functions on the boundary, cross So it's a holder type stability estimate. The holder constant comes from it by interpolation. Okay. So whenever you have a S injectivity and you can prove then you can prove a stability for the nonlinear problem. So for instance, for the two-dimensional case, one can prove a stability. The stability is only important, I repeat, for matrix close. So you have a stability. So you have injectivity that was proved using a very ill-posed problem, Calderon's problem, but still you can get estimate because you look at the linearized problem. Yes, of course, depends on G0. Yeah. So on this, I erase the statement, and this proves the theorem. I mean, it gives a sketch of the proof, because we know for a real analytic matrix, it's S-injective. And so this result tells you that the local problem is solvable stably with a holder type stability estimate. Mu. When mu is a number stricter than 1. For every number mu less than 1, yeah, so this is a brief summary of what we know for simple metrics. There are some things we know for non-simple metrics, but I'm not going to. It's much more technical, and the truth is we don't really have a good picture of that. And that's one, we need ideas to deal with the when you have conjugate points or non-simple metrics. Okay. I have very little time, so very briefly let me talk. I said in my first lecture that I will talk a little bit about reflection. I only talk about transmission, tomography. So how about the case when you have reflections? And there are several cases here that, for instance, when you have reflections, and you also can have an obstacle, and you have reflections, and this arises in different applications, and you have discontinuities on the medium, for instance, you have scattering points. So take we define what's called a broken scattering relation. You take a manifold with boundary, and now you take once broken rays, like here in the picture. So just one reflection from the scattering point. So you take these two are related if there is a broken scattering relation, and this time joining the two, and this time is just the sum of these two travel times. So here I'm considering the travel time. And the theorem is that without any condition of simplicity, this is joined with Slava and Matthew, who are both here. In dimension 3 or higher, you know the boundary of the manifold and the broken scattering relation. This is more information than the scattering relation. Then you can recover the manifold. And you don't need any condition of simplicity.
Why is it obvious that it's more information?
Yes, it's more information because in particular it includes all the rays that go straight through. This is, in fact, the dimension for the scattering relation, the dimension is 2n minus 2, what you know.
So there are more broken geodesics than there are geodesics, but if I hand you an x0, c0, x1, c1, and t in B, if it comes from a geodesic rather than a broken geodesic, how would you detect that just knowing this?
From the broken scattering relation to recover when a geodesic is not broken, that's what you're asking?
Yes.
Can you do that? Okay. You can explain that. I don't know whether you can actually. But if you look at the dimension of the space, let me say the following. You look at the dimensions of the scattering relation, it's much larger. it looks stronger, but it's not so clear.
May or may not be into
right.
One direction.
Exactly. But let me say that you will not. Yeah, well, that's a good question, actually. But let me say that to know this, that means you have to have a lot of scattering points in the medium. It's a lot of discontinuities for this to, as I say, like a random type medium, you have a lot of discontinuities to be able to recover something like that. Exactly. Not only one obstacle here. You have to have many.
You said, wait, because there's only a single bound.
A single bound. But I'm only using, it's not, it's... Right. Yeah, exactly right. Yes, you can have a, but I'm only looking at the, it doesn't mean that you don't have other rays, type of rays, multiple reflections and so on. You can have them, but I'm not taking them into account. I'm just taking into account the once broken rays. Suppose I know that from some information. We have some examples of practice from the radiative transfer equation when you, you know, when you have the radiative transfer and the scattering kernel, because scattering kernel is strictly positive, then you have scattering points everywhere, and then you can determine this. But you can have multiple reflections, other reflections that they are there, but. We throw them away. We just look at the first. Before we were just looking at the one that goes straight through, the transmission one. That's sort of the strongest singularity. And now you look at the ones broken. Okay, and I'm running really out of time, so let me talk very briefly about reconstruction. I talk about uniqueness and stability, how to actually use these ideas to reconstruct. I mentioned yesterday that in the two-dimensional case, we can use the exponential solutions of Calderon to do it. But let me mention another approach, which is also motivated from the Dedekind-Neumann map. Remember, I have this parallel I'm just trying to make between the Dedekind-Neumann map and the boundary distance function or the scattering relation. And so as I said, in two dimensions, you can use here e to the x rho, and then you have reconstruct the sound speed, it's isotropic sound speed. We have a method, I'm not going to describe it here. It has not been tested numerically. In dimension 3 or higher, we have this identity that's used a lot. To relate solutions of the Schrödinger equation with the data that you have, where the UIs are solutions of the Schrödinger equation. So the problem is reduced at the end. Can you find enough of this to be able to reconstruct? So motivated by that, we don't have, this is just done by integration by parts. We look at the following. We did the following. We got an identity which is similar in spirit. Unfortunately, for this slide, I have used a different notation than the one I have. But let me explain what you do. So you can see the following function of S. So this is the Hamiltonian vector field. I call it X before. Now I'm calling it. I call it X. That's good. Okay. So I start with one. I have two metrics. One of them is the one I know a priori, and the other one I'm trying to recover. So I start with one metric a certain amount of time, with starting at some point x0, c0, in some direction c0, and then I go t minus s time with the other one. So this is the f of s which is done there. So So you go with one geodesic, you start with one by characteristic, and then you take the other one. Why do I do that? Because f of 0 is just xg2 of t x0. This is the information at the end point of one of the geodesics. And f at capital T is xg1 of t of x0. And this is the one I'm supposed to know a priori. And now you use the fundamental theorem of calculus, as indicated there. This is f of t minus f of 0. And then you get this identity here. So v are the Hamiltonian vector fields. This is just the flow. The notation is unfortunately not the same as I was. And here you have the difference of the flows, like the difference of the potential, Bg1 minus Bg2. And this is comes from the solution of the ODE. This is the derivative of the flow against the initial condition, the metric exponential. But this is the information, I'm trying to recover G1, say, and this is the information that is given. You're given the scattering relation, say, for the metric G1, you know G2, assume, or the other way. So this you know, so this is what you know, and you're trying to invert this. But the reason to do this is that this is, although this part is non-linear, like here, U1 and U2 depends on the potential, but it's non-linear, but in the different, this is linear in Q1 minus Q2. So here you have something different, similar, is linear in the Hamiltonian. And so, in the fact, so let me take a particular case, because again, when you have diffeomorphies, it's hard to reconstruct. I mean, you have to find the change of variables. Let me take the isotropic case, which is, of course, of a lot of interest. And then this Hamiltonian vector field, as you can see, is linear in CK squared. So you are reduced to inverting, and this is you are integrating along the bicharacteristic flow. So you are reduced to inverting a geodesic X-ray transform with respect to the metric that you know, G1. This is a geodesic flow for G1. So this is the part that we don't know much. In the case that you are close to certain metrics, you know about this as well. So the reconstruction is based on inverting this transform, which is integration of the geodesic with some weights. And the weights are determined non-linearly in this way. But this is linear in this part. This is the data, and this is given. And so what you consider is x star x. Well, again, the notation is not so good. Let me call it r star r. I'm trying to invert this using r star r like I did before. So we did that numerically. Well, I should say my co-author did that numerically. I have no numerical expertise. These are the people doing numerical analysis. So trying to invert this transform. And the way they did it is by going in a layer stripping way from the boundary. You try to reconstruct the sound speed in layers. So you start from the boundary with, say, C1 equal to 2, and then you iterate in this. So you can solve it at every step. And then you go forward. So there are some pictures here. I'm going to do them. We did it for several cases. They did for several cases. For instance, this is the case of an obstacle that you were asking. So we're using both broken rays and non-rays, depending on the situation. In this problem, we are trying to recover both the medium, when you have the sound speed, and also the obstacle. And you can recover it. You can see here the convex hull of the obstacles and the medium. But so this is another example where you can recover the convex obstacle and the medium, the convex part.
Because when you have the obstacle, you can
Right, right.
But the point was, so somehow you have a signal that comes in, you get both bounds and back,
right,
and you know that it's bound only one.
We're only using, that's right, we know that.
It's kind of a natural thing.
So there is a everybody who has an algorithm claims it's better than the next one, right? But then in geophysics, unfortunately, there is a benchmark that is available on the web for everybody to try the and it's a very complicated model. It's called the Marmoussi model and has a lot of caustics. You know, all what the work I have done is no conjugate points. But there is no reason not to try the same method when you have conjugate points. We don't have analysis for that, and we try it, and it works pretty well. I said they try it again. Okay, so since I'm completely running out of time, I start a little bit late, right? So I was going to mention another open problem, which very quickly let me tell you, which I think is really interesting and very much related to this numerical method, which is very also relevant for application. Suppose you have a subset of the boundary gamma, so we put open problem eight. So suppose you measure the distance function only locally. Can you recover the metric up to change of variable? You don't expect to recover everywhere, but in the neighborhood of the boundary where you are. And then what we observe in the numerical calculation, then you can march in. Once you know the metric, then you can try to march in inside. Of course, this is very much related to the problem. Even of interest is the problem of just the geodesic X-ray transform. Suppose you integrate along geodesics like this, can you recover the function locally? And that is not known either. So this the local problem is a very interesting one as well. And I said that the first day that I was going to talk a little bit about this condition, I didn't have time, but let me just very quickly say that the right condition, I think, is that your manifold be foliated. Instead of simplicity, you want to require that your manifold be foliated by convex, pretty convex surfaces. The reason for that is that you start with something strictly convex, and then you want to be able to continue. And this is a condition that says that the spheres are geodesically convex for that metric. So instead of simplicity, my suggestion is to look at that condition, which is really the analog of this. Anyway, let me finish by making summarizing what we discussed. There is this analogy that I think is a useful one between the Dirichlet-Neumann map and the boundary distance function, although they are very different types of inverse problems. And we show that in two dimensions, you can go from the distance function to the Dirichlet-Neumann map. But there is the question for non-simple manifolds whether you can go from the scattering relation to the Dirichlet-Neumann map. And we show that that was the case if I0 star is onto and I1 is injected. Is that true for non-simple manifolds? For which class of non-simple manifolds is true? You can do that, then you can at least solve the two-dimensional case. But in dimension 3 or higher, one would really like to go the other way. Because we know a lot about the distance function, at least let's take simple manifolds for simplicity. We know a lot about the distance function, much more than the Dirichlet-Neumann map. For instance, Gromov result. Embarrassingly, after many years of working on this, we don't know the answer. If you have the Dirichlet-Neumann map the same as the Euclidean metric, is it Euclidean? even if it's close a priori to the Euclidean metric, we don't know. Why? Because the method has been complex geometrical optic solutions, and you cannot, well, we don't know how to construct the solutions for, in general, for anisotropic metrics. But suppose you can go from the infinite dimensional problem to the finite dimensional one. In some sense, this has a probabilistic interpretation. You take Brownian motion, and you are measuring the exit times, and the other one is sort of the classical travel times. Can you go from the Dirichlet-Neumann map to the distance function? So you can use Gromov result and several other results. So that's my open problem 8, 9. Okay, thank you. Sorry to go over, but I started late, right?